there was a session on homosexuality. That was a session which was held in response to requests to discuss that as a topic on the part of several members in the village. We had requests to continue that discussion and have set up a couple evenings just to do that. However, to continue that discussion by broadening the topics to the topic to rethinking sexuality in general, our scheme is just for each of us to say a couple of things, only that necessary to provide some direction to the discussion. But this is intended as a discussion rather than a duo presentation. I'll just say a couple of remarks, and Jerry will say a couple of remarks, and then it'll be wide open. Rethinking sexuality. In some of the literature that I'm acquainted with, and just from discussions, I think one could say that the whole call for rethinking sexuality comes from a couple of different sources. The first one can be easily named S. Freud. After Sigmund Freud, the one thing that we know that the tradition before Sigmund Freud was probably naive about was the degree to which we are sexual beings. If you look through the literature, say in Christian ethics, I think that there is a clear dividing line with the impact of Freud at this point. The degree to which our identity as persons is pervaded by our sexual identity. So that parents began to see in their children at an early age a sexual being, whereas they probably did not do that before Freud. The relationship between a people and its leader was understood in part as having some sexual dimension. Eros and identity and civilization were understood after Freud as having connections one to another. The second reason for the call for rethinking sexuality has probably simply been changed sexual behavior or advocated sexual behavior. You could just use the umbrella of sexual revolution to characterize this changed or advocated change of behavior. Everything that one hears about, sees, experiences on so many fronts, everything from the development of the pill to politics in the women's movement. There's a whole range of things that one might just call sexual revolution, and maybe naming that, talking about it, would be part of what we want to talk about here. These two things, or the understanding of ourselves, of the pervasiveness of sexuality in our being, and the changes in behavior in this century having to do with that sexuality, has pushed for many people all kinds of questions that add up to rethinking sexuality.
It seems to me that naming the sexual revolution and living it and experiencing it brings particular facets, particular problems to people who understand themselves as Christians and who see their lives as having been and continue to be significantly shaped by a tradition that is up for scrutiny and undergoing real examination within the sexual revolution itself. There is a need for us to kind of reevaluate where our tradition is coming from and how it is operating in our present culture. there are many who would say that our tradition is anti-sexual, that it carries very deep kinds of suspicions about, prohibitions against any kind of sexuality apart from a procreative sexual relationship. Now that's just part of a larger picture, because also in front of us is the need to sort out the influences within our culture, try to bring some sense of understanding and awareness and perceptiveness about the influences in our culture, because the influences are strong, the distinctions are perhaps very subtle, and we have not been particularly adept at picking out and delineating the subtleties of the sexual messages and images and perceptions that are coming across to us and to the people with whom we are living this age. So I think there's a need for us to work together in sorting out those influences and to ask what it is that is coming across to us, to our children, to our peers, as far as the message of the church, of the tradition, to this area of our lives. It seems to me that we live in a time where the sexual dimension of our lives is expected to carry an unusually high degree of the significance of our lives and of our relationships. Much higher degree than it certainly has ever played previously. So it's a new kind of time where our sexuality is somehow descriptive of our, or is to reflect on our wholeness as people. I think we have to give attention to the biblical material and to be able to work with that, and I would hope that we could do some more of what you were just starting to lead toward in the last session, Larry, in terms of how do you bring biblical ethics into relationship to contemporary Christian ethics. Those are some of the things that I would want to feed in to see if we have some starting places in terms of the discussion.
Well, one place to begin would be simply to ask the question, what is being communicated to us in our culture about sexuality? We can talk about roles or get at that many, many different ways. But what are those messages about us as sexual beings in the culture? And then another kind of question is a question of response to that. Is, mm-hmm. Might be other ways to approach the whole matter.
I hear very strong messages that are perhaps summed up in the word pleasure, or in a real desire for pleasure, a pleasure which lies in performance, but also is, you know, points beyond. I think for the first time we're living where our sexual relationships can be pleasurable. They are out from under the whole susceptibility to bringing about conception. And interestingly, I think one of the particular things that I see people struggling with, and this is moving, jumping away from what the messages are, is the decision about bringing a child into the world. For the first time, I see people struggling with the desire to have a child being a selfish desire.
Are we ready?
I object to the word sexual revolution. I think it's like my objection to the word women's liberation. It's an excessively demagogic word. Just for a feeble analogy, when the Kent State happened, articles appeared in the Learned Journal saying American colleges would never be the same. Well, they would settle back just the way they were before.
And, you think that's the case, Jim, with the sex roles and the impact of the pill?
Some changes, but revolution is not the right word. I think young men and women resemble their parents more than we sometimes think. For example, you read Playboy magazine and you figure that every guy is an amazing coxman, but it's really not so. They're just as bashful as we were at the same age, under the same circumstances. So I think there's just an illusion that there's been a vast upheaval. It's just an inflated vocabulary in terms of my observations.
I guess you've got consensus.
What do you mean by sexuality?
That's a question for the audience, right, Al?
Comes out of Marcuse's interpretation, in which he says we have focused sexuality on genitality and made sexuality genitality so we could control it. If you get it, you know, located somewhere and narrow down in that, including a whole range of behaviors that relate people in some sort of bond that have something to do with something which we call sexual, which might be physical, then you can control it. And you say, you get it narrowed down, and then you get it controlled, and then you've got the person in a bind so he can't enjoy himself. And so it really is a serious question,
yeah,
as to whether you mean something like sexual intercourse, that's sexuality, or whether our hugging is sexual,
mm-hmm,
or you know,
mm-hmm,
what is it we're talking about?
Do you have a sort of preferred understanding there, something that you would like to see that word mean?
I'd like to be broader, I think, than
genitality.
Yeah, I would too. I would like to see it cover the spectrum of, and I would like to have it deal with relationships. And I would like to have it do with more than intellectual exchange, but the impact that we have on one another, on a broad range of levels too.
Is it physical? Is that what we're talking about? Any kind of physical relations?
I have a question as regarding sexuality with regard to faith, just for kind of ground Wilhelm Reich's philosophy of orgasm and the Orgone principle and the energy flow within the body. And I know that I have thought for some time, and you know, my thinking I'm sure is not correct, you know, in any stretch of the imagination, but within myself I experienced my own desire, sexual desire, which is, I think, the very important part of sexuality. You know, who you are attracted to and why, and just that whole kind of electrical thing that happens in desire as an energy thing. And partly why in our society it has become sort of like the natural thing to do. You eat, you sleep, you drink water, you exercise, you have intercourse, da da da, you know, goes right down the line. But I think that just like with any other kind of energy, nuclear energy, for example, there's a tremendous amount of responsibility that goes with it. And so I would, you know, would question, where does the if this is valid, that sex is, say, an energy function of the body, an energy release mechanism or whatever, where does this fit into a Christian ethical concept of what the responsibility for that, you know, what do you do with that? When you have a whole pile full of nuclear energy, what do you do with it?
It's created, how do you redeem it?
Can we just explore that? I hear you saying something to that. Can we just explore what people mean by sexuality? You know, what kinds of things are there? What is the understanding? What's the overtone of that word? What is that?
Yeah. The first lesson is now, the summer before the dark, he talks about her sexuality as being an inner temperature, which was known, it was as if the males who gathered around her before she was married, when she was, you know, up for grabs, horrible pun, but anyway.
Not bad.
The temperature was something that they could read, you know. Huh. And when she became married, she learned to control it so they couldn't read it, you know, so that it belonged, her sexuality then only belonged to her husband. But since, and she, at the time of the novel, she's been married about 25, 30 years. And it's a very strange thing for her to go off on a trip by herself and have the experience of this temperature rising again. In other words, experiencing herself as a sexual being in relation to available men. In other words, she's going to have an affair, but she feels this temperature rising as if it's a dawning, a redawning or a reoccurrence of her sexuality, as if it had been dead in marriage. You know.
Maybe it was there. I don't know.
That's a good question, and it's the question I think of the novel.
I remember reading that, and the part, the time when she walked by some construction workers in different costumes, in just a different skirt and shirt, you know, and then she got the whistles and everything, and then she cloaked herself, you know, and walked by them again, and they all ignored her, you know, just like she could change it that quickly. Never really.
Well, that was her testing of whether sexuality depended on the outward appearance, you know. If she fixed her hair up and wore a tight dress and walked by these construction workers, the temperature radiated itself, you know, she got a cackle. But if she was sick at the time, if she put on no makeup and let her hair all frizz out, you know, and wear this sad sack of a dress, nothing. So that's a question, too. I mean, do we believe that sexuality is based on how you present yourself?
Hmm.
You know, how tight-fitting your pants are.
Hmm.
I know
whether
myself,
you're sexy or not. Yeah.
I know with myself, and this is really personal, but I think it's so pertinent, is that, I was married and then I was divorced. And while I was married, I did this kind of temperature thing where it was, you know, my sexuality belonged to my husband. And I was never approached, or very rarely was I ever approached by another man, not simply because I was wearing a ring, you know, because we had a fairly open marriage and stuff. But after I was divorced, the situation altered drastically. And I was so frightened by this, I didn't know how to handle it. You know, it was just a very frightened kind of thing that not on a conscious level, I think, but more on a subconscious level, I turned off my sexuality and was not approached again for a very long time, simply because I refused to see myself as sexual. And even now, sometimes at work, without any kind of drastic alteration of appearance, you know, a tight dress or the hair up or anything, just kind of wearing the same kinds of things I always wear, some days I will get much more sexual attention from men than others,
And only later will I realize that on that particular day I was hornier than I usually am. And I'll think, oh yeah, that's why, you know. And it wasn't any kind of a conscious thing on my part at all. It just, that's the way it happened, you know. I evidently just, I was radiating that without consciously being aware that that was going on. Which has been really interesting for experimental purposes. I've enjoyed it. Not only because it's good for my ego, but it's been fun.
I like to think of sexuality as being kind of a more engulfing term. I think it has a lot to do with appearances, but also a lot to do with attitude. And I like to think of it as our ability to accept ourselves as male and female, and to recognize, you know, the other sex also as being male or female. And I know that's very general, but I think sexuality is a very general term to me.
Can you say any more that would distinguish something as sexual as from something that was not sexual, even though it's a general and engulfing term? Is there something that marks it off?
Well,
that's not just addressed to you. It's all of us.
Our ability to recognize that, for instance, that I am a female and there's certain things about me that are different from a male, and perhaps some attitudes and other things that separate me from the other sex, but also that there are things that are alike and things that we can share as male and female, sexual relations and attitudes and activities and a lot of different things that can make us closer. And I think in the past, I don't know what I think about the sexual revolution. I don't know who mentioned it, but, you know, revolution is kind of a, you know, you can get off a lot on that term. But I think something that has changed is that sexuality or talking about sex is coming a lot more out into the open. And we are able to recognize that we are male and female, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's really beautiful. And I think maybe in the past it's been so hush-hush, and, you know, it was like we were demeaning ourselves to it almost. I don't know.
There's an opposite to that, though, too. It seems to me that role-playing has got a lot of switch in society, almost to the point that people are getting confused as to what a woman is and what a man is. There you go. Two other subjects you can go back to.
I think on that point, I think referring to women's liberation and women filling roles that men usually play, that really doesn't have to affect sexuality, because you can still be a breadwinner and have a certain thing that will attract you to an opposite sex. And I think one thing that I think of sexuality is that it's something different than sex, because sex is something that is held through every creature on earth, and it's only humans that have the talent or the ability to appreciate it and to use it as something more than a means of reproduction. And I think that's something that it was held to through so many centuries until whatever revolution came along and said that it can be something more, and that you can go into it and find higher benefits. Besides,
the spirit of past generations.
No, not I'm going back to
you read some of the literature, boy. They had a lot of imagination.
Well, yeah they did, but it was a lot of the revolution back then was very much put down. And I really don't think you have to revolt in order to enjoy your sexuality. You don't have to break away from society and make your own cult of loving.
there is something, well, I said about demeaning past generations, and getting to know some middle-aged to older pious German Norwegian professors, and you know, you wouldn't really expect them to have an appreciation of sexuality, and yet within their marriages, in class even, they'll come out and stress the fact that their sexuality is something that is a pleasure and that is really enjoyed within the marital relationship. And these professors have kind of felt good, so you know, they kind of prove it out. But,
well, I'm a little
No, I don't know, but they must have enjoyed it enough.
But also, you can look beyond recent generations, and recent meaning the past 100 years, and go back to far distant civilizations and how they dealt with sex. And the majority of roles are played simply for reproduction. And it's really not until you're in a society where you're free of the basic needs of survival that you can deal with anything on a higher level. And I think we've well reached that point. It's just a matter of knowing that and going beyond it.
Yeah, I really wonder though whether the idea of enjoyment of sexuality, whether we're using that term differently for different generations. Like, I don't know, in some of the history books that I've read and some of the older people that I've talked to talking about their grandparents and their great-grandparents, they've all stressed the idea that sex for them within the marital relationship has been a pleasurable one. Now maybe the literature has not reflected that, maybe the times didn't reflect it, because it was always kept within the marital relationship. Mm-hmm. And maybe what we're talking about in the term sexual revolution now is a revolution outside the bounds of marital relationship. And so it is a much more free term than it was before. But the sexuality itself was enjoyed within stricter limits.
But always, almost always, with the connection of children. And I know from my ancestors, the reason many of them got married so young was to have children to expand cities and to expand the country. And big families was a big demand at the time. But now the demand for children isn't nearly as great. And so I don't think that sexuality has to have that direct connection with having children. And that leaves another door open. That's off the topic.
No, we were just on.
What happened, Kulo?
Must have been effective. I think it helped, though, to get to what Tim was talking about in terms of the limits within which sexuality is enjoyed as a relational expression. And it would seem to me that the limits, if they haven't been exploded, have been very much fuzzed, and have introduced into our culture the question about the validity and the place and the value of all kinds of sexual relationships, without necessarily without placing them in a kind of orders of creation, that this is appropriate, this is inappropriate. One of the lines that have been fuzzed as far as acceptable or debatable, at least, sexual expression. No, what are the where are the places that, that people are talking about sexuality in ways which they see as quite different from at least their own past. Whether it has historical precedence is another matter, but mm-hmm. it's not where they've come from. Where are the, Jerry said something about some of the lines, if not exploded, have been fuzzed as with respect to what is permissible sexual expression. And I just asked, where are some of those things? The other, we talked about homosexuality the other day. That is one that is being reconsidered. That's surely not the only one.
Have we, before you do that, have we sort of made a consensus that sexuality is something to do with our physical being, whether it's the energy that's vibrated or whatever happens physically?
I don't know.
Is that the consensus?
Not in my mind.
No.
Is it different from sex, or is it bigger than genital sex, or... Is it man-woman?
Most of the discussion has been man-woman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You reacted.
Yeah.
You.
I think that because people change in different stages of your life, your sexuality changes, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything physical. I think it's like all
that. Could you just speak up so that that everyone can hear? Say some more along the same line.
Okay. I think that as a person changes, wherever they're at in life.
We can't hear.
Okay.
We'll repeat it. Go ahead.
As people change, I think their sexuality changes and in different stages of their life. And, like, it's different, and I don't think it has. Like, to me, it's not even a physical thing necessarily. It's in my head. And I don't know. That's...
What I heard you saying is that people have different awarenesses of themselves as far as their sexuality is concerned at different stages of their lives, and that that is pretty much oriented in their heads. And that's where it's experienced and expressed.
No, that didn't come.
Okay.
Okay, like, I used to be married. And, okay, in that stage of my life, sexuality was different than what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it changes. And maybe how you come across to anybody, not just a husband, you know, is going to change. So, like, to me, it's more in my mind. And, yeah, like, it's in my mind.
How you see yourself and how you see other people?
Yeah.
Very difficult to talk about because it has so much to do with how we see ourselves and what are the things that inform us how we see ourselves.
Yeah, because I think you see drastic changes. Like, I think, okay, your sexuality changes and you can just watch your body, your appearance and everything change with it. my way of going through different stages. Like from when you're 12 to when you're 13, when you get into junior high, high school.
I'm not sure I hear what's being said, but it makes me think of the way I look at sexuality as impossible, separated out from the rest of one's being.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I guess the basic concept I have is one of union, of relationship,
mm-hmm.
of uniting. And one can unite by talking or by eating or by intercourse or by feeling, by sharing an experience without saying anything together. And that notion of love or eros, you can use it generally for a basic concept, and I guess I would kind of universalize the Freudian concept of eros until it included all of this. And genitality was just one aspect of it, and never really, it can be kind of separated out, but it never really is.
So Al, would you say any relationship that is an erotic one, where some kind of desire for union is present, is a sexual relationship?
I think sexuality is involved in all relationships in some way or other. That is, and I don't know. See, the problem is, what do you mean by sexuality? I guess I think it has to do something with the biological and physical. It tends to move down there, but it's always related to other dimensions, spiritual, psychological dimensions.
Does it seem to...
That's what I thought I heard.
Yeah. Does it seem to you that in our culture we're attempting to use sexuality as kind of the touchstone word, that all of these other things are grounded in our sexuality, and I'm not sure that's the case.
I don't think they are grounded. I think in a sense they're all related to each other, but they all have a kind of separateness.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a matter of emphasis. But what I want to say is that I don't see how you can talk about sexuality without talking about a lot of other things. And what we tend to think of as sexuality is genitality, and you've at least got to extend it the whole physical. I guess that's what Marcuse did for me in a way. He said we focused it on genitality, and that's a way of controlling it. So everything that's sexual has to end there. Whereas if you can get free from that, then you can have a lot of relationships without genitality, which involves your whole being, physical, spiritual, mental, psychological. And I don't know how you'd separate something out and say that's sexual.
Yeah.
Because it would be a part of this whole experience of a relationship. And it's the relationship that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's bothered me about some Christian upbringing that I've known of is that it seems that a lot of children have not been allowed or encouraged to recognize and understand themselves as sexual human beings as well as emotional human beings, intelligent human beings, spiritual human beings. And I think that this causes a lot of confusion when we get encouraged to express and explore our emotional capabilities, our intellectual and spiritual capabilities, as far as becoming a better person, or becoming the person we're meant to be. But I think when the sexual aspects of us as human beings are encouraged to be kept, to be hid or not to act on them, it gets confusing to a lot of Christians when they get to the point that maybe they're out on their own or they're when it becomes legal or okay or all right. You understand what I mean? I think it causes a lot of confusion on their part. Because all of a sudden, it's an okay and all right thing that is encouraged. But all along in their upbringing, but you're encouraged to express your emotional aspects of yourself and explore your intellectual capabilities as well. Why not?
Yeah.
Because you are a sexual human being as much as you are an emotional human being.
Well, I was just saying that you're, in a sense, personalizing what I was trying to say, that our tradition perhaps has a very anti-sexual orientation to it, which deals with it as a... means of procreation and as having very strict kind of place where it is expressed.
We're so schizophrenic. I mean, we have those feelings, and then we have advertising.
Well, that's
tells us women, particularly, you know, how to get a man, or how to, you know, be our best selves,
mm-hmm.
whatever. And we have films, early films particularly, and whatever the expectations of our peers and things were at the time, certainly in the growing up. But, I mean, we were just caught. When you see them, you know, what you're supposed to look like or be like in advertising, and the Clairol ads, of course, are the biggest, the one that everyone thinks of in terms of what a woman's supposed to be like. I think it is. No wonder we're fouled up, in a sense, partly, is right, we're supposed to do things within limits or with legal rights and express our sexual beings and marriage bounds or whatever, but yet all the advertising for these years of advertising have told us something else.
Different message.
And, you make money on those sort of things. And so our economy tells us one thing. You know, even selling a car, who's standing by a car? It's this creature, you know. And so you buy this, who is it, Vance Packard, that talked about how men buy cars. You know, if they buy the convertible, it's for their mistress. And they buy the sedan, it's, you know, they really don't want the sedan, but it's, you know, for the wife. And I mean, you know, all these things going on in our heads. It's crazy.
I think like Stuart said, I agree with that sex and sexuality are not synonymous. And I think we're sort of back and forth getting it confused, because what I heard Krista saying was that we are all sexual beings, and that doesn't mean that we're all beings capable of having sex, but that, and you know, that we're all capable of having intercourse, but that we're all sexual beings in our, you know, in our whole being. And I don't think that's brought up to children or all the way on up. I don't think it's emphasized enough that sexuality isn't just sex, and that it can go beyond the bounds of marriage, because it's just how you relate with another person of the opposite sex. And you can relate through conversation or eating, or like the example that I have.
And Anne just put numbers on the scale. She said, relating to the person of the opposite sex, I'm going to argue my sexuality. It's all encompassing, you know, how I relate to other women, other men, you know, children, all children relate to other children. Yeah,
I agree with that.
I think we do a lot more talking about it. Philosophizing, but as I try to relate what I hear, you know, talked about now, it seems to me a lot of people just had with, for lack of a better word, I call practicality. When a mother is coddling a little baby,
as sexy, and it can be coddled by somebody else later. When the father is awake, the daughter comes home from a date, and they talk about it. You know, this is all about, it's just practicality. It's been going on in a family that is centered in Christ, that is concerned about each other. And I don't know as if it has to be separated and taught as sexual.
I don't think it does have to be separated, but I don't think it's brought in at all. You know, I think that it is all combined with your intellectual, spiritual, and emotional life. It is all, you know, you can't separate them, really. It's just that I think what she was saying is that the sexual part is kind of avoided completely, and it shouldn't be. It should be part of that, all-encompassing.
What more would you do than other than some of these practical things which I'm mentioning happen in practical terms? What would you want to have happened to you that didn't, for instance?
Well, I don't know if I would want to do that. I felt like we were pretty open about it in our family. But I don't know. I guess I'm an idealist in a way, and I would like to just see it be talked about like your emotions. I don't know, I was really close to my parents, and we talked about emotions a lot, you know, and how you feel about something, and it was, I don't know, I guess I can't put it into words, but just not hiding it, mostly.
Well, in our family, we never talked about it. It was hush-hush, and you know, something you never learned about except accidentally.
But now aren't you talking about genitality again?
No, I'm talking about the whole problem.
The whole thing.
I wouldn't think of having a discussion about it. I never had a discussion like this until I started coming up here, I think. My body. It's open. Sarah and I went to one conference at the University of Minnesota last year on sexuality, and it's the first time in my life that I ever was in a group that we haven't started to talk yet, really.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Yeah.
About sexuality and all of the problems that are related to relating to other people in the context particularly of what we call genitality. It was focused kind of on genitality, but still you got involved in all the issues. Never in my life have we had that. We have had one of those discussions here, really. I mean, we're scratching the surface. And I don't know how we could get. See, we got in groups of about 15. We were 2 days together, and somehow it just started. And we talked. And we weren't even with our spouses or our significant others. Because we want to be free. Now, I don't know how we get that conversation here, but I'm sure we're not going to get it tonight. We're just beginning to get it, but maybe somehow we could get smaller groups and do it. I don't mean to stop our discussion, though, because all of this is, I think it's good to begin to get us talking about it.
One of the things that I was thinking as you were talking about is that it's really apparent to me, coming from quite a degree of unhealthy attitudes and unhealthy behaviors regarding sexuality, lack of knowledge, etc., and working through it in therapy, it's become really apparent to me that in our society, in our advertising, in a lot of our relationships, there is much game playing with sexuality, that you don't really say what you mean, you know, to someone you're attracted to or to someone you're not attracted to, you know, on either end of the spectrum. You don't really say where it's at with you. Or if you do, the other person simply can't handle it. You know, they don't, either they block you or they don't understand you. There's so much garbage in the way that it's a very difficult subject to deal with. I myself am a very earthy person, and for me it gets down to gut level stuff, and I'll just deal it out the way I see it, and that's the way I have to live.
now. It's the only way I know how to live right now. I hope that I can maybe get someday get to an intellectual level about it, but I'm not there yet. And I know that it's really difficult for me to deal with my sexuality with a lot of people because I can't get through. You know, I can't even get through myself. I know that I'm playing games with myself. You know, that I'm saying one thing and I'm doing something else completely opposite. You know, or I think I'm doing something that I'm really not doing at all. Or, you know, just so much deception and so much garbage in the way that it's just very difficult to get anything past scratching the surface in most cases. And where that takes us, I don't know. I get one of the things I'm feeling right now is I'm feeling that sometimes I feel scared that sometimes when I talk, people will maybe be offended because they say things the way they are. And I feel, I sometimes feel scared to say something, to say it the way that I would honestly say it, you know, just let it come out rather than putting it into different, you know, like I should take the time beforehand to put it into a nice vocabulary that people will accept. You know, if I put it into these certain words, then they'll accept what I'm saying. But if I put it in these words, then it won't be accepted. And for me, that's very frightening. Most of the time, I just rather keep my mouth shut, you know. Mm-hmm. And sexuality is one of these topics where the words in themselves, when you're talking about sexuality, are very difficult to deal with most of the time. It's just, even if you can get yourself to the point of saying, as Al does so beautifully, genitality, you know, that is a word that I think lots of people that I know would have a lot of trouble saying with ease, unless you said it a number of times. You know, you had gotten yourself to saying it.
You practice up and
we now move on. I can't have a sexuality workshop where that's all we did for, you know, for half hour was just say words to get used to saying them, you know, so that they would become natural things.
And that in itself says a lot. Yeah. Our attitude is answering something that what you brought up, you're asking what she would do, you know, to try and change things. One thing that bothers me a lot is children. I think this goes back to what Crystal was saying. And just the attitude that even small children have and where have they gotten them from their parents or from TV and things like that. One of the teachers in Narnia mentioned to me that she had said the word but in a group of kids, and they all went, oh, you said a nasty word, you know? And that really upsets me, you know? Just their attitudes about their own bodies and parts of their body and words that they can't say, you know? It's scary.
I'd kind of like to touch on one subject, and that's, it's right off of that, and that's sexuality in the educational system. And really how that's dealt with or not dealt with until you get to the age of high school and they start throwing don't get VD films and you know, don't have the front car incident, the front seat of the car incident with your first date. But there's points before that when you enter, you know, grade school and elementary where you can begin to deal with the other points of sexuality besides genitality, where you can start to touch on forming friendships, forming loves for both sexes, and learning to deal with the anatomy as the anatomy. And I know my education happened to be a little more open because I wasn't in America. And on the farms in France, they really don't care about the parts of your body, they've seen it enough. But when I got here, I went from France to a school in Atlanta, Georgia, and they were a little different about sexuality. In fact, I struck up a relationship with a black girl, and I ended up almost getting thrown out of school because of that. That goes into racial things also. And so, I guess I would like to know some feelings of other people or experiences within education and perhaps ideas, considering that's what I'm going into.
I think as far as acting at the school, they are really trying now. I imagine it goes differently from one school to the next. But I know, like, when I was in school, I was, I never thought anything about my junior year of high school. And,
And then what did you find out?
But I think they are saying that way, that I didn't mind with the friendship bit, and like, I don't know exactly what they do from K to 3, but at the fourth grade level, I know we're teaching family life and relationships among the family. And then I know fifth grade is more, but I know they don't really get it at home. Some of them do, but I think it's still sort of sheltered. And I think there's hugging around the spring, and I think they get it from each other a lot more than we do.
I don't think we can really blame the educational systems either. I think it comes back to the family itself. My mom always comes home, she's an English teacher, and she's teaching the students some knowledge. These are eighth graders, and a few of the parents, John Bird Society, and it's a smaller community, and they'll find these books, and they'll find, quote, dirty words in the books, and then come back to the principal of the school, and it boils back down to my mother, the teacher, because, she was giving the students dirty books. So I think it really goes back to the family as far as education.
But also, I think within the format of school, you can begin to introduce sexuality. I've never heard of a creative writing assignment that dealt with love. I've just never come across one. It's always been, what would you like to do when you grow up or something? But never anything, there's so many ways that you can bring it in besides saying, this is life. There are so many other facets of sexuality for me that can be introduced into the school, into creative writing, into any of the open topics besides the math or the sciences. And I think those can be utilized so that our society is more well-rounded as people. And when you leave high school, you aren't thrown into the world. And that's when you find out what sex is.
I think schools are really trying now too. Except I'm a fourth grade teacher, and when my kids come into the room, their attitudes are really bad, and I'm not blaming it on their other teachers or their family situation because it's the combination of both. But I think it's a real goal of mine, and it's great when my kids can finally sit by each other, girl and boy, in the lunchroom and not put up shields with their arms. That's a real terrific thing for them to do. But again, referring back to Jim, I think parents, we do a lot of do-so things and glass of technique type stuff. And my parents come back to me and tell me how open their kids are at home, and they don't like it. And it's mud in your eye again. And then I've seen too where my first year kids, how much they digress from the teacher they had this year. This one's pretty good, I guess. But I really felt that they just grew apart from what we had gained from the year that we had done many, many stuff with. So I felt kind of like what we had done, and it was a lot of developing understanding of self and others. That was the do-so thing. Jess kind of went to pot with their following experiences. I don't know if it'll last for what they're going through now. I feel good about it when it's going on, but I don't know how much of it they'll retain.
I think a lot of that is still being a revolution, because a revolution is something that is supported by a minority, and until a majority supports open sexuality and opening all of it, if it's put down, even two-thirds of the time, it's going to fall apart.
You see France as better and more wholesome than France is. I haven't lived there, but in reading a variety of publications. When the French make a pornographic film, I've read many times, they can often not find enough French girls to perform the acts, so they bring them in from Scandinavia and places like that. And also, France has a certain amount of unity there in terms of a vague Catholicism and in terms of a language. And a country that has a unity can often have a stability that one does not have that's as divergent as their own. So I don't think France is a perfect example. Also, people can be very relaxed about their use of language and have built-in inhibitions in other areas, which the French may or may not have. And sex should not be, seems to me, just one more wholesome activity of life. It should be remained somewhat underground and somewhat mysterious. I don't think it should be opened up to just sociologists and perfect rationality, as many of you want to do. Even a certain amount of ignorance might be good. Contrasted to a society where it's all ironed out like Montana and the flat areas.
I disagree because I don't necessarily think that talking about something flat and flat, I don't think being open about something reduces its intensity. I just finished reading C.S. Lewis's chapter on sexuality in his book, Mere Christianity, and I had never read any of Lewis previous to this. And I was really impressed when he said, would all of us be gathered here in this room right now and discuss the dinner that we just ate? As, you know, would we, unless of course we were gourmet cooks, you know. But sexuality has become a topic that is so interesting for most of us. You know, it's just a fascinating topic. It's one of our tremendous pleasures in life. And, of course, it would be a bit sick if we considered food on the same level of, you know, if food was as much pleasure to talk about, to discuss, to, you know, rationalize.
You have to look at who you're talking about. Yeah, right. He's got something to back his statement up.
Here and there, it's abused and disabused.
Yeah.
I think, too, though, if we can go back here.
Yeah.
I think, too, not only, you know, is it might be good to keep it hidden. Not necessarily that, but I think, too, a lot of our discussion blows the whole sexuality out of proportion. I mean, as everybody's been saying, it's only part of our relationships with other people. And yet, if we look at what's the discussions that are going on today, the discussion in this room, it's kind of just blown itself out of proportion. I mean, because it's one part of our life. Okay. And also, there's the idea that sexuality is not always enjoyable. I mean, a lot of people really get hung up, and I've gotten hung up myself, when sex or sexuality, whatever you want to call it, is not enjoyable. I think it's always got to be enjoyable, and it's not. It's a lot of work sometimes. But, you know, to think that it always is to put it in a position that it really isn't. Yeah.
But the question is whether or not, by not discussing it, and by kind of covering it over, you don't really lift it up, Jim, to a place where it really is all out of proportion, because it is so hush-hush, and you can't talk about it, and you don't deal with it, and so then, unconsciously, if not consciously, it just assumes a role in our lives that is very destructive, I think. I think it's destructive because we can't take it and leave it, or leave it, you know. We don't deal with it like we deal with other things. We treat it differently. Now, what else do you treat like we do have done? I don't know what it's done now, but like we have done. What else in our existence is treated so hush-hush and so off-bounds? I don't know.
The only thing that I would say to that is, you know, you can treat it really quietly and blow it out that way, or you can blow it out discussing it all the time. And focusing on another point is, you know, discuss it contextually. That's right. The only thing.
Well, I don't discuss it all the time, but the only time.
No, I didn't mean all the time.
As a matter of fact,
you have to go a hell of a long way to find a place to discuss it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean discuss it. I think we got a real issue to know what we're going to do about it, or even think about what we're going to do about it once we begin to get it in the open. Because there are a lot of crucial issues about open marriage. You know, what are you going to do? If you begin to get this thing, child, you know, 13, and are we going to shift our marital institutions and so forth so we get free like people are in most cultures? Most, you know, the other cultures before Western civilization got so fancy, and I say in a way so developed because we want to use people. We don't want them to begin to develop their natural, we don't want to take their natural kind of rhythm seriously. We got a social system that's going to try to destroy everything that's natural in us. And I don't know what I mean by natural in any simple sense. That I'm not suggesting that our relations with other people are not very complex and mysterious. Every single relation with a person is mysterious, I think. Is it significant?
I feel that having the freedom to talk about it, the freedom to express how you feel, the freedom to ask questions will help a person gain understanding of themselves and will better equip themselves to go out into to go away from the guidance of a family situation or of the parent, just as a child gets advice from their parents on a lot of other subjects that will equip them to handle certain situations, I think that they really need it. And if it's kept hush-hush, that so many of them can get into situations that they might not know how to handle, had it not been a more open situation where they would have felt free to ask questions that they needed to know the answer to that might help them in certain situations when they got away from that environment, when they had to deal with it on their own instead of under the guidance or influence of their parents.
I agree with that idea too. I think that, like, sex is kind of a focal point of deciding us to add to agreement. And you use all the devices that testing get this cost, you know, it's trying in so many ways. And it's like an open marriage, they say, well, maybe we should, you know, live as a person for years, think you can have pleasurable sex before you get married, you know. And a lot of other things on that line, I think sex is number one, and some people's values. Well, maybe an open conversation like that can help reorder your priorities. You know, keep them in your chest. Because you talk about it doesn't mean that everybody's just going to go out and just because you talk about it as far as keeping it fresh out. I just feel that it's really going to help them understand. And how to use it in the right way.
One of the things I hear you saying, Christy, is that how can you be responsible for something you don't even understand? You know, and mm-hmm. I know for me, sexuality is a question of personal responsibility. What am I willing to be responsible for in any kind of relationship with anyone? How far am I willing to go? You know, what are the limits on this relationship as I see it right now? They may change drastically in the next 5 minutes, or you know, but right now, how do I see this relationship? How does the other person see this relationship? Do we understand one another, and how much are we being willing to be responsible for the other person's well-being, for their feelings, for, you know, whatever would come naturally, would come in this relationship? And since sexuality, as I happen to agree with Al, that it is a part of every relationship, I, you know, adults with children, adults with adults, men with men, women with women, I believe firmly there's always an element of sexuality, however you define it, in relationships. And that it is responsibility out of love and concern for other people, for people you are involved with, for people you are relating to. What is my responsibility? How much am I willing to pay for right now? You know, do I have enough cash to pay for this thing that I want in this relationship in one sense? In another sense, is it just going to work? Is it going to help or hurt? Or are we going to grow? Or is it going to crush something that is really nice? Can we handle it? you know, what's going on? What's the real foundation of the relationship?
I think since we're making a case, we're talking about sexuality. Another reason we're trying to add them up is that I appreciate knowing that other people have some feelings that I probably thought were my own and I felt very guilty about. I'm glad that people have problems.
Yeah, right.
I'm glad I'm able to identify with some other people that we have, as human beings, we have some common problems, and not, although some, there's uniqueness about me, that some of the things I've gone through, other people have too. And in talking about it in a concerned group of people, where people are concerned, I think, not only for each other, but for one's being, I think makes it useful and helpful to all concerned, or can make it useful and helpful to all concerned. Makes it useful to me.
Tim?
Did you make it useful?
Since I've been here, I've heard a lot on the, making a case to talk about or not to talk about sexuality, and also defining it. But like Al said a little bit earlier, the sexuality is a fertile field.
Did you say that?
There are so many. Well, he didn't say that.
I'm right. Well, I think you should take that.
But since there are so many substantive points that we haven't even begun to broach, if it's at all possible, I'd like to encourage the leaders to try to set up maybe something in the following days where maybe we could begin to talk about some of the substantive issues that come under the rubric of sexuality.
We'd like to hear what you would call substantive issues.
Okay, well, we don't have that much time.
Right.
I think what Stu brought up, sex and education, is one. Another thing is after you talk about sexuality in terms of teaching facts, what is the underlying meaning of how we relate as sexual beings? You know, is it just learning certain facts and details about us as sexual beings, or what is the meaning behind those facts and details? Three, how does one's personal faith theology play a part in determining how you look at the other person as either threat or gift? And I think that's a real important issue, sexuality and threat. Sometimes I think the problem behind sexuality is only a magnified problem of the larger human problem that is looking at each other as threatening beings. You know, and what happens when we see each other as threats? And I think that explains a lot of the magnification of commercialization and sexuality, of using people, technique and sex, open marriage, on and on. But threat and gift,
to be continued, huh?
Right.
Come on, 6:30.